This is the Automotive Repair Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results Radio. Good to have you here. Thank you so much for your loyalty over all these years. Our listenership is way up. I think you all know we created our own podcast listening app and rebranded the company to the Automotive Repair Podcast Network. You can get this app on the automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com and on the apps page, or a lot of the stuff that we put out has our logo and stuff on it. And don't forget, everyone, you know, we do have a YouTube channel and Carm Capriotto YouTube channel where all of our stuff goes. And that is always so nice. I have a great interview coming up with James Stevenson from Precision Auto. It is such a great interview that I just can't wait to do it. But first, great high fives from our sponsors. Take your Napa Auto Care Center to the next level with the Napa Auto Care Gold Certified Program. Gold Certified shops, well, they stand out. Build trust and enjoy exclusive benefits designed to drive business growth. Contact your Napa representative today to get started with Gold Certified. Hey, did you know that Napa Trax has on-site training plus 6 days a week support? It all starts when a local representative meets with you to learn about your business and how you run it. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Let us prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Find Napa Trax on the web at NAPATRACS.com. Hey, let's get started with James Stevenson. Hello, James.
What's up, Carm? How are you?
I am great. Wow. When you and I had our discovery call, usually my discovery calls with anybody I'm going to do a podcast with is like 20 minutes because I hate doing the podcast, you know, when we're not recording. And you and I spoke for maybe an hour and a half. I think it was me wanting to dive in and find out all the great things that you're doing. And the thing that I love about James in his very young, crazy life, he's done a lot of things, continues to do a lot of things. And we have a couple of mutual friends. And he told me this great story. And I have to start this story out with Bob Cooper. You were this young, impressionable, I don't know where I'm going, you know, shooting from, you know, all cylinders. And you went and you complained to Bob about something. And he spun your head around.
He spun it around. That's a great way to look at it, for sure. He did.
Tell us that story, sir. The listener, you're going to love this story. Go ahead.
Many years ago, when I opened a repair shop, I was a really good technician, but just a disaster of a business owner. You know, I didn't know what I was doing in that regard. And quickly, I realized that obviously coaching was the direction that I needed to go. You know, I used to get these magazines sent to the shop, and I'd read about Joe Marconi and Bob Cooper, and one day something resonated with me and I became a client of theirs many, many years ago. And so as the years went on, the shop got better and better, but we started to kind of fall victim to this hiring crisis, right? It was a real challenge to find good technicians. Man, it just seemed like everywhere I was going, I was striking out. I just couldn't find them. And everybody I would talk to, everybody just kind of had the same problem. It's tough to find people. You can't find good techs. It almost became easy to succumb to that side of the discussion.
James, I'm going to stop you there. How long ago was it?
That's got to be 12 years ago.
My God, it sounds like now.
Yeah, I think at the time when I was going through this, you know, another thing that kind of validated that side of the discussion was just that, like, I had read a stat, and I don't know where it was, but it said that there was a 70,000 skilled tradesmen or women shortage, and that was like just in the Pittsburgh area, you know, at the time. And you know, and obviously that resonated with me, and everything that you were hearing was, you know, it's impossible to hire. You can't hire. You know, I had this incredible company that I was working with as a client at the time, and they had this class, and it was called Fly with the Eagles. At the time, Kevin Vaught and Joe Marconi were teaching that. Kevin was actually my coach, my direct coach and mentor. I really wanted to go out to this class to go see Bob Cooper and just kind of hear what he had to say about how to hire people. The guy always, he's such a charismatic guy, and I just really relied on him heavily for all kinds of insight. And prior to that, just bigger decisions that I had made in business. So I was like, just so excited to go and see him because I knew that he was going to have a solution. So I fly out, and I'm getting ready to fly out, and the plane gets delayed, you know, maybe an hour on the runway or something. I'm just sitting there patient reading a book or something, and then it gets delayed for another hour. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to miss my connector, but whatever, I'll get there. And so after the second hour, they say, all right, everybody get off the plane. You know, the flight is canceled for tonight. you know, we go down and we're trying to get our bags and everything, and I'll figure out a way to get there tomorrow. So next thing you know, we're waiting on our bags, and, you know, over the PA, they said, yeah, on such and such flight into, you know, it was a connector into DC and then into San Diego. They said, if you're on that flight, get to the plane now, you know? And so there's this big scramble to get back up onto the plane. And I get on the plane, they fly us into DC, and there's no connector, but they can fly me into San Francisco, you know, with no other information. I'm like, man, how am I going to get to San Diego?
James, trouble is following you or preceding you. Well, this is a story about what Bob told you, but I guess by the time you got there, and woe is me, it was piled high and deep. That's what PhD is, piled high and deep, right? All this crap that was going on.
You know, my wife and I, Nicole, we're big into like signals, you know, and I'm like, man, there's some signal telling me not to go to this place today. You know, it's like, there's just so many obstacles, you know? And so I end up having to spend the night in the airport in San Francisco, and I get to the class a little bit late. You know, I didn't have my bag, so I had to buy some clothes before I get there. I get there just a little bit late. And so I walk into the class, I'm there for a couple hours, and in walks Bob Cooper. And they always had breaks. And, you know, in the first break, Cooper comes right up to me, and he's just such a remarkable guy. Walks right up, hey, James, how are you? You know, how's your, you know, wife and kids? And he remembers everybody by their names. He goes, how's the shop doing? How's Precision doing? You know, and that was my one shop at the time. And I said, Bob, the shop is doing well, but the problem I'm running into is hiring techs. Like, I just can't find anybody. And everybody I talk to, you know, they're all having the same problem. And he pauses for a second to take it in. And he looks at me and goes, isn't it great? And so at that moment, I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy's lost his mind. I went through like all of this stuff to get here, and he's gone crazy, you know? And in true Cooper form and fashion, he finishes it up and he says, look, he goes, it's great. You know, he saw the look of surprise on my face, obviously. And he says, it's great because the guys like us, and he points at me and him, and he says, because the guys like us that realize that there's a problem are the ones that are going to be able to solve it. He says, we don't want to join that negative side of the argument. He says, so we're going to look outside the box for solutions. And he says, in about 5 years, he says, shops like yours are going to be the only ones standing. And I'll tell you, man, as taken back as I was when he first started the statement at the end of it, man, that's something that literally changed the way that I hire, changed the way that I run my companies now. It really kind of put me on a different side of every type of discussion. It's like wherever there is a lot of, say, negativity where people are saying, man, you just can't do this. It's not the right time. You know, you can't hire technicians. That's the time to do it. It's almost like buying stocks. You know, if there's blood in the street, that's the time to buy typically, you know? And so it kind of put me in a totally different mindset and for many discussions.
James, why is there so much negativity out there? Everybody's a pundit and, oh, that's terrible. It's never going to get better. You were kind of taught to look at the positive or the solution side of every problem. And that's the thing that I'm trying to combat for the last 10 years by putting the kind of positivity on our podcast, Listen to Learn Just One Thing. And you take that thing and you implement it. I think the one big takeaway from this episode is going to be, isn't it great? Oh,
it is.
I can't breathe. I'm underwater. You know, I had a straw. I'm sucking air from a straw. Isn't that great?
I think the biggest thing that I learned from Cooper over the years was that you have to really be fragile with how you talk to yourself, that inner narrative, right? And you don't want to join these negative discussions, and you have to have a positive mindset. And I have grown to understand that like a negative opinion is the easiest one to have. Like I have some seltzer water here, right? It would be easy for you, Carm, to say, I don't like seltzer water. And I'd say, why? And you'd say, I don't know. I just don't like it. You know, I just don't like it. And so I'd say, well, I do. And you'd say, why? And I almost have to defend it, you know? And so it's just so much easier to just say, it's just, I don't know, everybody else isn't doing it. So like, I'm not going to do it either, right? Everybody's slow, so I should be slow too. Everybody's not hiring, and so I shouldn't hire either, right? I'm joining the discussion. It's just easier. It's like that crowd mentality. And so I think some people go upstream and they find solutions. And, you know, that's kind of where I live my life. And I can tell you that Bob Cooper and definitely Kevin Vaught were very instrumental in that, because it was very easy for me naturally just to kind of fall into that negative side of the discussion.
So how did you overcome this? The technician crisis, everyone tells me it's really never a hiring problem. We hear a lot of words. We hear always be recruiting. We hear retention is a big thing, the culture of the positivity, so that your top people don't leave. And if you're growing, that's a good thing. It's a positive thing. We need more people. And a lot of times your own people help you recruit.
Our own people help us recruit, but I think that it's actually not that difficult to hire good technicians, I don't think, right? I don't feel. And so to date now, at that time, I had, you know, maybe two companies, one auto repair shop, and then like a real estate management company that managed my real estate. And now we've got about a dozen companies. And at all dozen companies, we don't have an issue hiring. We actually have an abundance. I can tell you firsthand right now, we have almost too many people and we need another business so that we can put those people in. And what really changed for us was obviously that discussion, but ultimately the way that we look for technicians, we stopped hiring out of need. And we started recruiting for technicians the way that we recruit for customers. We started doing it all the time, right? When you're looking for a customer and you market for them, they may not come in right now. And there's right customer, right message, right time. And so it's about opportunity and constantly being in front of them. There's also like that abundance, and then there's a scarcity mindset, right? And so like when you first start out in business, you have the scarcity mindset. Man, how do I not go broke this week? How do I pay my bills? You know, and then there's that abundance mindset. Well, how do I hit my goals? How do I exceed my goals this week? And so when we approach looking for technicians, we just want to find the right people, and we want to do it not out of necessity, but we just kind of recruit for people all of the time, just like we're recruiting for customers all of the time and better vendors. And, you know, and then when you have them, you're nurturing all of those relationships. And so for us, it's just, we don't put any more energy into one or the other. We just do them all of the time. It's kind of like the tortoise and the hare. We're just kind of always walking through all of those processes, refining, figuring out what we did right, what we did wrong, and just continuously moving forward. And from there, we're able to hire from a place of abundance rather than scarcity. So we're getting better quality technicians, and we're able to just kind of like nurture the pipeline. And then obviously when you have them, it's just like having customers. You want to make sure that you're, you know, nurturing that customer base all of the time. Well, you want to make sure that you're taking care of your people. And in my experience, it's not just pay. It's how you treat them. It's all the little things you do between the lines. It's a million different things. And I can tell you that early on, I probably didn't always do a good job at nurturing those relationships with the technicians.
What was the defining moment that got you out of normalcy and into loving them and doing more? I mean, can you go back? Was it 5 years, 10 years? Was it something Cooper told you? Was it something that you did inside the business and it worked so well and says, we got to do more of this?
The defining moment for me was actually a kind of a semi-tragic one. We had a long-term staple technician. He was our pillar in the shop. And unfortunately, he passed away, you know, not in a great way. It was really jarring for all of us, especially me, because I had grown so close to him, working with him for about 10 years. And we had to hire somebody else to replace him. When we did, I think we took a lot of things for granted in the relationship. And I began to just work more on obviously training and systems and all of that stuff. Like there's a lot that goes into it to make sure that they have everything that they need. But more than that, you know, just helping them understand that they are part of the company and that we care about them and doing a lot of the little things. But another thing that we do is we really make sure that their goals are our goals. And we internalize that stuff, you know, 1, 3, 5 year personal professional goals. We sit down periodically through the years and, you know, we just try to find ways to make people get things. We've helped people buy houses and cars and, you know, invest in their family and all kinds of different things, things that are not necessarily always required of an employer. But for us, just like a customer is a relationship based relationship, right? So is a technician. We see these people more than we see our families. In reality, right? We're here with them all day long. And then we go home, we have dinner with our families, and we maybe watch a movie or read a book together, but then everybody goes to sleep. And so with the technicians and the people that we work with, we're with them all day. I think there was like this older mentality maybe that I was brought up in and that other people were brought up in where it was kind of like when I was a tech initially, I had learned basically that I was doing a good job if I got paid on Friday. You know, there was really nothing more to it. I didn't get a lot of congratulations. Nobody celebrated wins with me. None of that stuff really happened. And so as I learned how to be a manager and an owner, it was really kind of the same thing. I didn't really know any better. And so through trial and error through the years, I learned how to be better at building these relationships with these people that I'm around all the time. And, you know, it helped me appreciate them a lot more. And I believe that they appreciate me a lot more too.
Now that you know what it takes to become a Napa Gold Auto Care Gold Certified Shop, let's talk about the real value, what you get when you achieve gold. This isn't just about status. It's about tangible benefits that grow your business. Gold Certified Shops receive premium placement on NapaOnline.com at no additional cost. With millions of site visits each year, your shop will be one of the top options consumers see when they search locally. That visibility, it means more cars in your bays. You'll also get $1,500 annually in marketing funds for pre-approved co-branded messaging, helping you connect with your community while benefiting from the national reach of Napa branding. Combine that with preferential referrals, and you've got a powerful marketing advantage. Gold certified status enhances consumer confidence with an extended 36-month, 36,000-mile peace of mind warranty and local labor coverage, proving you stand behind your work. You'll also gain access to award-winning Napa Auto Tech training for technicians and service advisors, helping improve efficiency, reduce comebacks, and support retention. Additional benefits include Napa credit card financing rebates, year-round peak performance promotions, Napa Trax shop management software, SmartSign Pro customer engagement displays, a team tool rebate to invest in your technician's success, and a $300 annual credit toward Master Technician or Blue Seal ASE certification. Gold Certified Membership is designed to help you recruit, retain, and deliver the best experience to every customer. Are you ready to elevate your shop? Contact your local Napa representative today to see if you qualify and start your journey to Gold Certified. Contact your local Napa sales representative today to see if you qualify and start your journey to Gold Certified. Let's face it, your shop management system is the single most important tool in your shop, period. Napa Trax was built from the ground up to make your business more profitable and efficient. We provide an extensive set of tools to increase and track profitability in real time. Napa Trax offers the industry's best post-sale support, hands down, and we train your people on site. Yep, on site. And we offer remote refresher training 10 times a week, and customer support is open 6 days a week. Give us a call, visit the website, or join our Facebook community today to learn more. We'll prove to you that Trax is the single best shop management system in the business. Napa Trax is always customized and tailored for you, whether you're a one-man shop or a large multi-bay or multi-location company. After all, it's your shop, so it's your choice. Visit us on the web at NapaTrax, that's NapaTrax.com. I just can't believe James is doing this. I mean, here's the opposite side of the listener saying, what do you mean you help your people buy houses and reach their goals? And I get that. And it is so important. And the top companies are doing that. But an individual who's listening to this saying, what is he, nuts? What did it take for you to realize that that was an important step?
I guess I just began to think about, like, what would I do for a friend? Like, how would I treat a friend if they work for me? But obviously distinguishing the difference between friendship, you know, and boss, because sometimes you have to hold people accountable. And it's a different type of accountable that you can hold a friend than you can, you know, somebody that works with you. And so I think it just became like, you know, Carm, if you were like, hey, James, you know, I really want to buy a house in the next couple of years. Well, all right, Carm, what kind of house do you want to buy? You know, and what's your budget? And we'd begin to have that conversation. And I'd begin to think about, well, who do I know that's selling a house? Or who do I know that are realtors up in your area? And then I began to just kind of approach the discussion that way. Wherever I could begin to help an employee somewhere personally, it really put something in what Bob Cooper would call the emotional bank account. And I think that it really did a lot for me to really begin to celebrate those wins with them. You know, I don't know. I think it did something to my heart. It makes me feel good too. And our staff has been with us. I mean, we don't have high turnover.
What you said is so powerful. You started to question the individual, what kind of house, what kind of budget. And when you take the wisdom, James, that you have and the experience that you have of maybe buying one or two houses up until this moment in your life, and I don't know that to be true, but there are so many people out there that need the wisdom of someone not older, but who's been there and done that. They could be the same age, but oh, yeah, I bought a house a couple of years ago. We're only 30 years old. So what'd you do? How'd you do this? And I think for people willing to share the things that they found successful, that they stumbled with, and it doesn't mean, Oh, I want to buy a motorcycle. Oh, great. What kind? You know, how fast you want to go? What do you need it for? Are you going to go on the leisure trips on the weekend? What are you going to, you know, biking with friends? All of those determine how the decisions are made.
Well, the other thing too, it's like, all right, Carm, you want to buy that motorcycle and how much is it? Well, it's $20,000. Perfect. Well, how much do you have to put down? Well, nothing. Okay. Well, how's your credit? Well, my credit sucks. Okay. So like, how do we fix your credit first, right? Well, I'm in debt. Perfect. So you need X amount of dollars to get out of debt. And then we've also got to save X amount of dollars to begin to get you that down payment for that motorcycle. And so it's going to be a twofold thing. We're going to do both at the same time. And here is how we can help you do that, right? Like, our pay plan is structured to incentivize the behavior that we want to see out of the technician. And so if you can, you know, have one less comeback and, you know, maybe one less second call, and you could do a little bit better job with your inspections, you know, our average repair order is going to increase by this much, and you're going to notice X amount in your check. And then from there, what we can do is we can put this in a different bank account for you. It can kind of sit there. It'll gain a little bit of interest. And in, you know, 12 months, you're going to pay off your debt and you're going to have enough, and you'll never even actually feel the hit to your paycheck. What would you think about that? Would you like it? Of course, they're going to say yes.
You do that for me?
Yeah, of course I would do that for you too, Carm.
Oh, thank you so much. But that's the, without saying the word intimate, and I do love the word intimate, but by still being the boss, you're helping this individual reach goals. I've heard stories like this over and over again, and that creates what I call stickiness.
It does create that stickiness. You know, you have tonight, for instance, you know, my birthday is this coming weekend. And, you know, tonight when we're done with this, a bunch of guys will come by and we're going to have cigars and kind of just hang out and have fun, you know, a bunch of people. And a bunch of the guys that work for me at different companies all can't wait to come by. You know, they're all excited and they like sharing wins with me as we do things. And I love sharing wins with them. And it's just a really cool culture because I internalize their wins and I internalize the things that they need as well, because I don't know, it's like they're here, they're with us, and you want to make sure that they're getting, like, there has to be some benefit in it, right? Like, working for us must enrich their lives. And if it doesn't, then we've done something wrong. And that, in my experience with coaching, I don't know, dozens of shops through the years and growing dozens and dozens of businesses through the years and helping all kinds of people, that is usually where people get lost when they have people. And they're like, these people don't stay with me. They leave me for a dollar. They didn't leave you for a dollar, right? The heart leaves before the body. They left long before that. And the money is the easiest excuse.
Are you finding that some of your people are living paycheck to paycheck or beyond their means?
Definitely. People that come in and they start working with us, there's probably more of them. We don't quite realize it because, you know, if I just started working for you, I probably wouldn't want to tell you my full financial situation either, especially if I was driving a new car, because I know on the surface, I can't afford that car, you know, and I shouldn't have that payment, but it does something for your ego and makes you feel good. And you've got that gigantic $10,000 toolbox that you don't need. The $1,000 one holds the tools the same way. And so in a lot of cases, you don't have that relationship with them just yet to give them that mentorship. But as they see, you know, like, what I do now isn't just owning that one shop. You know, I'm constantly acquiring clients, companies, acquiring property. And, you know, so they see me on the move all the time. And that becomes infectious. You know, it really, really does. Because when I go and I take on a new company, I don't go and hire externally. Sometimes when we acquire a company, well, in most cases, we try to keep as much staff as possible because the staff is really where the value is. They've been running the company for the most part. But when we go and we take on a new company, we just kind of plug our company into their company. And so in doing that, it helps when we have people that have already been trained and been using our system and been helping us just win, creating successful companies that have high CSI and obviously produce, you know, enough income for all of us. And the best way to do that is like, is just for us making sure that that emotional bank account is full and then promoting from within. And so it's like when you go and you get a cell phone, Carm, you and I are going to go Verizon or whatever, you know? And so we both go there and you don't have them, but I do. And so now, Carm, they're going to give you a free phone, $1,000 credit and a back rub. And, you know, and I still got to pay my bill. I've been paying my bill on time for 20 years. How come I don't get anything? When everybody can see that there's room for growth in our company and that the hard work is rewarded today, you know, on Friday through, or well, today, because we always celebrate the wins with them. Hey, great job, Carm. You did awesome at this. And then on Friday, they see a little bonus or they see something. All of our pay plans are built around making sure that we share the profit, you know, and they've got something going into a 529 for their kids because that's a goal of theirs, or their 401k and all of these things. They celebrate all of that, but now they know, hey, look, if I could do a real good job and I pass all these tests and everything and I can get to the next level in this one building, well, guess what? When James opens the next one, I can be a lead tech over there and I can go and help onboard other people. And that begins, you know, the discussion about how we begin to plug our company into other companies. You know, in a lot of cases, some of the leads that we get when we start to acquire another shop is exactly that. I can't find people. No one wants to work. No one wants to do it. I'm like, well, what if I could put three, you know, solid B's and an A tech in your shop Monday? What would that be worth to you? And that begins, you know, the kind of the next discussion of how we have gotten into kind of solving this succession crisis. You know, the first crisis was techs, you know?
I loved your analogy about the cell phone, the new customer. It's priceless. We have all sat in front of our TVs and seen our cell phone company recruit new people and give them the world. They dug down in their Santa bag and gave this person everything, and why not me? Okay? And that pisses me off all the time. And I always say, I'm going to quit these people, but then I got to find someone else given all that stuff. What a great thing to say that I just hired a new person, and in order to get them, I had to do this, this, and this, and that, and that, and that. And I feel really bad that I haven't done, there's an equality thing happening here. So for all the people that are listening that are owners, CEOs, hiring people, be careful, right?
Yeah, I remember years ago, we used a hiring bonus and, you know, and different people in the coaching circle, because, you know, I've got just as much experience as a professional coach as, you know, just for automotive shops as really, or I had prior just as a business owner, you know, and so I've been in the coaching space for a long enough time to be a veteran coach. And so I've got a really, really strong circle of really some of the guys that you've had on this show. They've been in all of the big publications and everything. These are really brilliant people. And I'm fortunate enough to have them, you know, in my corner. I call them regularly. We all talk regularly. And one of the things a few years ago is they're like, James, we got away from hiring bonuses. I'm like, why? You know, because it's a good hook, right? In marketing in general, you want a good hook, right? Things that move fast, people all look at Tesla Cybertrucks and beautiful women. People all turn their head and they look at those things. Well, the same thing is true for a big sign-on bonus, but our crew has been with us in every business long enough that everybody has gotten the bonus. You know, and a lot of guys will say, well, if one guy got it and the other didn't, it's just not a problem. We've been using it for so long. And so, you know, that's one real good way to attract them, but it's not necessarily how we always get them. It just gets them to call, right? It's marketing. You know, you're marketing for new people, and marketing in general is how do we evoke emotion? You know, and then from there, our hiring process weeds out anybody that's not great and isn't going to share our culture. And, you know, we bring in the good ones and we give them everything that they need, the time, the tools, the training, and the accountability, and we build them up.
James, I liked your answer, but you say, we've got all these people here and they've gotten the hiring bonus. Well, what if you got somebody there for a dozen years, but you needed to do a hiring bonus on somebody new, and that person from a dozen years ago never got that?
Oh, we had that.
Are they going to understand that this is how it's done today?
We had that with one singular person, and we just gave them the bonus. A good buddy of mine was a divorce attorney, really prominent divorce attorney in the Springfield area, and he always had this funny saying. He says, it's cheaper to keep her. And I think that employees are the same way. If you have a really good employee, you just take care of them, whatever they need. And if that was the constraint and it's a couple thousand dollars, it didn't matter to me at that point. It was a really good team member.
It's the do right rule. And I get you. Now, this whole silver tsunami opportunity, because obviously you have dropped a couple of hints along this interview that I'm buying companies, you know, I'm doing a little private equity myself. What's going on with the silver tsunami? I mean, for the whole industry, there's a lot of opportunity.
I think a lot of people are still on that negative side of the discussion, and it's the technician discussion still, you know? And so you've got a lot of people that are like, I don't know, man, I can't hire good people and there's nobody out there. And so I'll just do it myself. And these are people that have run really good businesses and they're really smart people, but maybe they're already set up financially. Maybe they're not. It's, you know, none of my business, but in any event, they lack the motivation to go and change right now, right? We've been doing it this way forever, and I don't want to deal with the headache and the stress of bringing somebody else in. They're not going to do it right. You know, in reality, what we find with a lot of these companies is they're not doing a lot of the things that they need to do to nurture the relationships when they bring them in, or to give them the structure that they need when they bring them in. It is a real crisis. You've got a huge generation of people that are kind of, they got one foot out the door and, you know, they still put out a really good product for their customers, but they're not in any position to do the things that they need to turn their business into a sellable asset right now. They still, for lack of better words, they own a job and they don't necessarily own a business.
100%. Are these people, these shop owners, smart enough to realize that they have something to sell if they get back to their core values and profitability? And are they also willing to step aside knowing they really don't have a whole lot to sell?
It's a great two-part question, Carm. You know, and I think that they are smart enough, but I think that there are two things there. There is opportunity and then there is desire. And so, you know, there's a mountain in between the two in some cases, you know? And so, you know, recently we were looking at a company in Connecticut right near us. It's a shop. And this will kind of sum it up. The guy was trying to sell his company and we went in there and we met with them. And so the first thing that was a red flag for us is when we're beginning to work with a company, we need to understand the profitability of the company, where they're at. We need to know that we can add value, you know? And so one of the first things that happened is we go in there and the shop was messy, chaotic, you know, and instantly when you walk in, you're like, I could definitely add value to this shop. You know, from the parking lot, I knew I could add value to the shop. We walk in and we're sitting down at the table and there's the broker and there's the owner, there's me, and there's our CRO, our chief revenue officer. His name is Nick. He helps us with sales training and just overall systems, make sure everything runs smooth. And so Nick and I walk in and there's the broker and there's the owner and we sit down and even the desk is broken. You know, and so they want X amount of money for the business and they want X amount of money for the real estate. And so on the surface, it just didn't make sense. And when they sent over docs, they're missing 2 years of docs. Like the prior 2 years, not even 25, they're missing 23 and 24. And 21 and 22, they didn't even show a profit. And so I'm like, how did you get this number? You know, but nicely, you know, Carm, help me understand how you got to this number. Well, because we do all these inspection stickers. I said, okay, great. You know, so you do all these inspection stickers. That's awesome. Yeah, we do them all. And they threw a stack of papers at me, Carm. You wouldn't believe it. This thick stack of papers. Look at all these inspection stickers I'm doing. Great. What's your cost basis on the stickers? They had no idea what I was talking about. You know, well, we pay $6 per and we charge $20. Isn't that great? Yeah, but you're paying a guy $20 plus the load. So you're paying $25 an hour for a guy. How many can he do? And so on. And you know, they're not getting repairs out of it and everything else. And so I'm like, all right, next. Hey, Carm, where's the last 2 years' tax returns? We didn't see them, you know, in the disclosure. And what happened? And so the broker and the owner both kind of chuckle and they're like, well, he never filed them. Well, why didn't he file them? And the owner goes, we didn't want to pay taxes. And I said, oh, that's how you do it. You know, and so right there, there is no sellable asset. There is no business to buy because we can't get a tax clearance letter. There is no business to buy. The harsh reality of it is that business, there is no EBITDA on that. One, it's a loser on paper. You must show revenue and you must pay tax to build value in your business. And a lot of guys, as they're getting closer to exit, they're taking a little bit more cash in cases, and ethical or not, that's their business. And, you know, and they're just not putting the money back into the business that they would before they sell it. It's like buying a house. You know, you buy a house, you start with the end in mind. Right. And you're like, man, I know the next buyer, he's going to want a pool and he's going to want a nice shutters. And, you know, this door that I have to jiggle the handle and like lift it and twist it a certain way to get it to close. Man, I got to fix that because Carm's not going to want to buy that. Right. And so these guys are not putting attention into their business. Not all of them, but the majority of them are not putting the attention into their business because it's just not their focus anymore. And a lot of them, when I go to the deal table, respectfully, I find that they just haven't done any of the things that they need to do to get the multiplier that they want. You see, when we value a business, we value it. We use one of two things, right? SDE, seller's discretionary earnings, or we use EBITDA, earnings before interest, tax, depreciation, amortization. No, I speak quickly, but at the end of the day, when you boil down the financials of the business, there is the true calculation of what a business is worth. right? And so like, say on a business that does like $1.5 million, on average, it's going to do about a $300,000 EBITDA on average. And so under $1 million, we usually use SDE. And so that will like back in like your personal truck that you're running through the business, your home office, stuff like that. We back that stuff back in and you add that in there. But in this case, you say, just for, you know, discussion's sake, we'll say it's EBITDA. Well, if the business is like fully self-sufficient, it's run well, you can leave, you could take off for a week here and there. The afternoons are no problem. You got to go on vacation for a couple weeks. It's no problem. It's going to run. Then you get a multiplier of maybe 4 in this industry with the wind at your back. If you own a job like this guy with all the inspection stickers, first of all, there is no value to that, but then it maybe is just straight EBITDA. And when you show no gain in the business and you're not paying tax, there's nothing there. It's zero. You know what I mean? It's 100% of nothing. I find it unfortunately too common. I find it very, very common, you know, and for us, it's opportunity because the asset there really is the people. I've found more owners that I guess I could classify as bad owners, unfortunately, than I could classify. And not all owners are bad, Karm. Please don't take it as that. A lot of them are really good people. They just don't have the ability to put the energy back in. But the people that work for these companies typically are incredible people. And they really like, I've rarely met an employee at any of these companies when we're in due diligence that go into work and they say, man, I really want to do a bad job today. They always say, man, like, we could do a better job, but we are still writing paper tickets, or, you know, our credit line is shut off over here, or our lifts are broken, or just whatever it would be. They just don't have, we go back to time, tools, training, and accountability. They don't have the things that they need to do the job, and they're not celebrating the wins with anybody because they're not getting them. And that to me is why I see that there is a big technician crisis, because you have people not wanting to go into the industry because a lot of shops are just maybe not run properly. They've been doing it the same way forever, and now they've got one foot out the door. Now, I don't think that is the majority of shops at all. I think the majority of shops are probably really well-run shops, but I think the majority of shops that are even well-run could do way better with a coach. You know, I think they could do phenomenal things with a coach. I think that these shops that we're talking about that kind of have somebody that maybe has one foot out the door, they could do better by exiting and letting somebody else take the reins and manage their people and build their staff up, build their team up.
And if you're struggling today, I'm not trying to say that age is an issue, but if you're a young individual 10 years in and you're really struggling, say you're 40. Well, I want to get out when I'm 50 or 55. Great. Well, then start doing the things you need to do. I'm a big advocate for coaching. Every time I've talked to a friend who said no, then realized then they did and said I should have done it 10 years ago. I've got people that I know in this industry whose EBITDA, whose profitability is on fire. They're getting ready to go and buy another place. They're hiring much better people. And I guess one of the things that we've talked about in, for the 10 years that we've done this show is get up and out of your own way. Get an advocate, somebody willing to help you, like a mentor, like a coach, a networking group, peer pressure networking group, and you'll be amazed how your life will turn around. I have another really quick question, and then I'm going to let you go, but I think I have to have you back because there's a million things I still want to talk to you about. And here's one of the other things. I call them hidden superstars. You walk into a building, you see it, you're negotiating, it's not the deal that the guy wants. But yet, 2-3 months down the road, you get a chance to buy it almost at the price you were offering because he realizes he doesn't have a whole lot of things to sell. And there's 3 or 4 people inside the building. Are there any hidden superstars? And I believe there are inside of some of these marginal and failing businesses who just need the right encouragement to become top, top people. Are there hidden superstars out there?
Yes. I could tell you in all of the deals that we have been in, every single one of them we acquired because everybody was a hidden superstar, just about everybody, you know. And when we bolt our company onto another company, and just to kind of make that clear, what we do, we're not a typical private equity firm and we're not a typical consultancy. We want to essentially guarantee success for the shop that we begin to work with, and we partner with them, right? And so like, we own our accounting firm. That's my wife, Nicole, and she's got a you know, other CPAs with her. And then she's got a litany of bookkeepers. They do a phenomenal job. She's the smartest person I know. Beautiful inside and out too. And I'm sure she'll listen to this and I hope she loves it.
I've seen her picture. You're right.
Yeah. Nicole is a phenomenal person. Just she's really as beautiful inside as she is outside, but she's a phenomenal bookkeeper. She's brilliant. You know, from there, we have an entire coaching team. We have an entire marketing company. And from there, what we do is we come in with our team, you know, and so we train your writers, or we just give you writers that we've already had working in other businesses. We train your techs with some of our master techs, and we've built a training program, or we put techs in your business. And in any event, it's all about mentorship at every level in the company, you know, and so we come in. I think one of the questions we get asked is, they're like, well, what are you going to pay for the business? And I'd say this, Carm, just kind of in closing, right? If it's not so much about that, right? Like, we're not necessarily buying. If I told you that I could market your company in a way that is ethical and promote you as a leader in the industry and in your area, and, you know, a real asset to your community with charitable events, and I could streamline your shop and modernize it with systems and programs and all of this other stuff to really give a better customer and employee experience, we get somebody to handle all of the phone calls and train your staff, we could put techs in your shop that'll teach your techs, train your techs, and help you really continuously recruit, then what is it worth to you, right? It's not so much that we're really buying, we're kind of selling you an opportunity. And then from there, we put people into the portfolio, and then there's something totally different that happens after that, you know, because the way that it works with us is we have a portfolio full of these companies. And so if you had one good business that was running really, really well with the wind at your back, totally self-sufficient, you have EBITDA of, say, 4. Now you're in a group of shops that all own their real estate, that are all run the same way, using the same systems, the same people, so on and so forth. You now get EBITDA of like anywhere between 18 and 20 on the whole package. And so by working with us and allowing us to help you and partner with us and build up your team and your systems and everything else, the win at the end of the day is incredible, you know, but that's a whole other episode in itself of how we structure that and how we do that.
It reminds me of instant oatmeal. Just add water.
Pretty much. Yeah.
Get out of the way. We're just going to add water here. What do you do for fun, James? Don't tell me. I don't have fun, Carm. I work.
I wake up early.
As we in our discovery call, we realize that our brains never turn off. We wake up, we have notepads everywhere so that we can write our random thoughts down.
Carm, you know, I woke up the other night at 2:30 in the morning because I had an idea. And I'm writing the idea down. And as I'm writing it down, I'm like, man, I wonder if Carm is up right now writing down an idea. It was the craziest thing.
Honest to God, James, I probably was, because I have this 3 o'clock automatic get up. And don't ask me why. And then I try. Sometimes I just have to turn the TV onto some really boring channel. In fact, I've heard the fun thing about this is when you're in a hotel room or you're away and you can't sleep, you just throw Forensic Files on because you've seen all 500 episodes and they're all boring and crap to you, and you go right back to sleep. That's what I was told.
I'm a Dateline guy. I watch a lot of Dateline. And then I look at my wife real crooked after. I'm like, what are you up to, you know?
Oh, my God. I think you're just like that suspect that was on that show. Anyway, hey, James, thank you so much for your great perspective on things. Precision Auto 7 Shops, a private equity company. You even own a plumbing company in Texas, you told me.
Yeah. We got about a dozen companies on portfolio now.
Good for you. And will you come back?
Absolutely, Carm. I've been listening to this show for so many years, and I got to tell you, it is an absolute honor to be on here. And I know you're a busy guy, and I know you talk to the top people in the industry. And I got to tell you, I'm really humbled that you had me on here today, and you know, you saw something in me to have me on here. I really do appreciate that.
Sounds like you're doing some really good stuff, but thanks, James Stevenson. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive repair business podcast, Remarkable Results Radio. Get your episodic education on the ARPN listening app at automotiverepairpodcastnetwork.com. Also, enjoy the podcast on our Carm Capriotto YouTube channel. Carm is all for advancing the professional automotive service industry. Until next time.